Back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast presented by FanDuel. As always, James and Corey here. We are back. On Friday last week, we did an instant reaction episode to the games of the quarterfinals of the college football playoffs. We've digested the tape and we're here to talk about the actual tape of those games, what stood out, as well as kind of what to start looking forward to into the semifinal games as well between Miami and Ole Miss, Oregon, Indiana. But James, What was your like overall theme, overall thoughts of these games?
Overall thoughts. So I think that defense definitely just across the board stood out. The defensive players, you know, individually stood out more than offensive players. My biggest takeaway from this weekend and from like just kind of the how the season has unfolded is actually sort of a side point from the draft, but it's that I completely misevaluated what the ideal way to build a roster in the NIL era. I thought that with all of this, constant roster turnover, that the teams that recruited and developed in high school retained their players, they had continuity. I thought the Clemsons and the Penn States would like emerge from this. Maybe not Clemson because, you know, Dabo was specifically resistant to using the portal at all, but seeing not just the transfer portal, but getting in older players. And you've got like Indiana, they had a bunch of 23 and 24 year olds going up against like five-star freshmen and sophomores. I've just completely reshaped like my philosophy on how you should build a team in college football.
It's also interesting that the quarterbacks that are left as well. I mean, Mendoza was a big transfer and I guess Beck made a lot of money too, but like, outside of that, Dante Moore was brought in to sit and learn and then take the reins too. So maybe this takes not as good, but like Chambliss, Stockton, really, I'm going to throw Beck in there, even though I know he's really highly paid. Beck, Morton, even Simpson, like these guys aren't like highly touted quarterbacks, like left quarterbacking these teams at the college football level or the college football playoffs either. Like they're not the dynamic quarterbacks. And so it's interesting that like kind of the talent around them has kind of risen to the top as well and kind of set these teams apart too.
I mean, I look at Ohio State and I don't mean to pick on Ohio State, but like I think similar thing with Alabama and you look at like the transfer portal exodus of freshmen and sophomores and it's like, and then the subsequent, you know, inactivity that some teams that are, you know, prestigious programs are having in the portal. It's like you've spent all your money on these high-priced high school recruits. Like most young players, they're not going to be ready to play day one. So you're investing all this money and developing them basically for nothing. Then they don't get playing time early on. And then they go start at like Missouri or Kentucky. I would go like bargain bin, you know, 3 and 4 stars recruiting, you know, keep the ones that develop. And then just, I would go heavy in the transfer portal as long as I had the funds.
I mean, that's what Indiana did. That's what Ole Miss does every year. It's what Oregon does every year. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I blame you there. All right. Let's go in chronological order here of the way these games were played. And that starts with Miami, Ohio State, which was a beatdown in its own regard and on the scoreboard, like the second closest game. But like this game was further apart on the field than it was on paper with Miami winning the game 24-14. Let's start with the offenses here, James, specifically with Miami's offense. Felt like this was a CC Moinoa game. I still think, even like if you pull up, like I think Jordan Reed posted a highlight reel of all of the Moinoa blocks in this game. The blocks that he's making and the way he's moving still tell me that like this guy needs to play inside at the next level. But I think we saw with Will Campbell and Kelvin Banks, like they're giving these guys the opportunity to fail outside. Do you think he's done enough to deserve the right to fail outside at the NFL level first?
Yeah, absolutely. He's probably not going to be a guy that I like officially change to guard on my board just because he would fit into that, like let him fail at tackle. I agree with you. I mean, it's funny that Caden Curry was saying like if we played this game 10 times, we would win 9. It's like when you watch Caden Curry and Mo and Noah's one-on-ones, I don't know how many, like how much pressure you're in, like what more reps would do for him individually, maybe the team. But yeah, Mo and Noah had a dominant performance, but I do agree with you that like when you watch the tape, he does move like a guard.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. He's a little less mobile than guys like Banks and Campbell were last year. But just the deficiencies or the supply and demand at tackle, I think you kind of got to let him. You're taking him high, at least. You kind of got to let him play out there. Anything else from the Miami offense? I mean, outside of this, like Carson Beck looked good. Carson Beck's ADOT was like 7 yards in this game as well. Yeah. Because like Carson Beck will pick you apart if you don't force him into second longs, third longs. If you just let them throw RPO bubbles, slide flats, all this stuff, he's gonna get the ball out fast. And that's what happened in this game. He wasn't forced to really make a throw much at all in this football game.
Yeah, it was pretty uneventful. The only other main things I had from the offense was I thought Mark Fletcher had some great pass pro reps. I don't know if he's going to be in this class. I'm not like a huge fan of him as a prospect. He announced that he's coming back, but I've heard that he could be a guy that like if he continues to play well in the playoffs might reverse that decision, which I get based on the depth of this running back class, but I don't know that he has a ton of draft upside regardless.
No, he's always kind of the back that's like, I would love to have Mark Fletcher Jr. in my running back room, but like, I'm going to take him in like the earliest, the fourth round. Yeah. There's just not a lot of long speed, not a lot of juice there, but like, I like his eyes. I like his patience and I like the initial burst. And I think that's good enough to get me wood. Like, what's the old Leroy Horde quote from back in the day? Do you remember this Leroy Horde quote? He's like, if you need me to get you 3 yards, I'll get you 4 yards. Or if you
I've heard that.
If you need me to get you 2 yards, I'll get you 4 yards. If you need me to get you 5 yards, I'll get you 4 yards or something. Right. Like that. And it's like, that's who Mark Fletcher is. And I love it. I love it.
I've heard a similar version is like, if it's blocked for 3, I'll get 4. If it's blocked for 5, I'll get 4. Like,
yeah, I love it. Outside of that, there's not a whole lot to talk about. I know there's some people who really like Inez Cooper and Markell Bell along that offensive line for Miami. I can kind of get there with Cooper a little bit, but Bell to me is long and that helps, but like his feet are heavy.
Too much of a fee-fi-fo-fum athlete, yeah. I think. But yeah, I think Inez Cooper has had some moments. I've only been paying attention to him for a couple games, so I don't have a grade on him, but seems like a potential day 3 pick.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the Ohio State offense here. This game just continues to solidify. Speaking of Carnell Tate just declared, that was perfect timing on the podcast to, as we're talking about Ohio State offense, Carnell Tate officially declares, not that that's a surprise. But this Ohio State offensive performance, if you would have told me going into the game that Will Kaczmarek would be one of their leading receivers in this game, I thought I would have been like, okay. But it just continues to like reiterate my love for Will Kaczmarek, not because of what he does as a receiver, because he's an ass kicker in the run game. But it was kind of cool to see him actually get his in the receiving game in this one as well, which is, might be an indictment of the offense and their inability to create explosives as a whole if Will Kaczmarek is catching as many passes as he did in this one. But I like Will Kaczmarek, man.
Yeah, he had a nice game. As far as the, you know, not targeting the receivers, I made a comment about Ryan Day in our like instant reaction, but watching the tape, I'm putting a lot more of that on Julian Sain, because I mean, Carnell Tate was wide open on some deep posts where he didn't see the coverage rotation. I mean, he left 2 touchdowns to Carnell Tate on the field.
He left a touchdown on Max Clair on the field too. Yeah,
or it might have been Max Clair was the second one that I was thinking of. But yeah, some missed opportunities from Julian Sain for sure, and that's definitely like I would definitely be putting more of the heat on him as opposed to Day. Like if I'm an Ohio State fan,
yeah,
don't get in any of their like Instagram comments.
Right. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, that gets a little rough. There was the one that would have been a 90-yard touchdown. Like they were on their own 10-yard line, and it was against inverted 2. Carnell Tate split inverted 2 and didn't even see him. A rough performance from Julian Sain. And, you know, we'll get into the list a little bit more in summer scouting, but like, there was a lot of jumping the gun with Julian Sain. Every game that I've seen him have to play within one score has not been pretty. Just, and like the tools. I mean, at best, Mac Jones, but he's right. 3 inches shorter and what, 30 pounds lighter than Mac Jones. So like, I don't know what to do with Julian saying, I don't consider him a serious quarterback candidate in the 2027 class at this point. Like I'll chart him this summer, but like, doesn't have the tools, doesn't have the frame. And then if you don't have the tools and you don't have the frame, you have to have better instincts and wits and pre-snap and post-snap smarts than what he showed in this game. Just flat out. You have to be perfect.
Yeah, I think he could get to that point with a few more years of experience, but the results, especially against the better defenses that he's faced, you know, where he was under pressure and actually like in true drop back situations, like, has not been good. So I would agree with you as far as his 2027 projection.
Yeah. The other takeaway here is just a couple of back to school candidates based on this game as well. Max Clair. I still like Max Clair, but like, you have eligibility, so take it, kind of thing. Like,
right.
And unless he just really feels like Ohio State's not the place for that to happen, and we might see him portal out again because they just didn't target him a lot in this game. But maybe now with Tate declaring and with Chris Henry Jr. coming up, a true freshman, they might feel like having Claire would take some pressure off of the true freshman right away. I don't know. But, and then Austin Cyraveld as well, a pretty firm back to school candidate after that game too. He went out hurt in this game as well after just 29 snaps, but
the old 0.0 pass blocking grade.
Yeah. And there was even some reps where like, you're frame to frame with the defender, which is where Cyraveld thrives and should thrive, and he's still like getting walloped in this game. Yep. So in an ideal world, I think that Austin Cyraveld should have the opportunity to kick in, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. If they transfer in a tackle, or they start Ian Moore, who played 31 snaps of left tackle in this game, I don't know what happens there, but I would love to see him play some guard next season. Anything else from either of these offenses you want to hit on?
What do you think about Carnell Tate? There's been a lot of negativity from him in this game. I didn't really think it was like a bad game from him necessarily. No. I just thought he wasn't involved.
Throw him the football. Yeah.
He was like, if Saiyan sees him on that deep post, like no one's even mentioning Carnell Tate.
Right. Exactly.
In a negative way.
And the one you want to mention him negative for, he's running a freaking curl that's leveraged way inside, probably a yard and a half inside. He's pivoting outside and it's leveraged back inside on the wrong shoulder. Like, he has no shot of catching that football and he still gets lit up. So like, I don't understand what we're doing with that, but no, I don't have any big takeaway negatively from Carnell Tate from this game.
Switch over to the defense.
Yeah, let's do defense. For me in this one, Caleb Downs had an awesome game again, pretty much all coming downhill, but he did force those two fumbles. Neither of them got recovered. Ewan mentioned that Carnell, Arvell Reese, actually going back to the tape, you liked a little bit more of what he did there. And I could agree with that. The two missed tackles from Sonny Styles, man, he almost pitched a no hitter all season, man.
But he played so well in this game. Aside from that, dude, like, okay, one of the few weaknesses that I have on his scouting report is like, needs to improve his zone IQ. You watch him in this game. I mean, I don't think he got targeted, but he was taking away routes. Like, he looks like one of the only linebackers in college football that knows what they're doing in zone coverage. Like, the purpose when he gets into that drop and like, know that he's not just covering grass. He knows exactly what route he needs to take away. That was really impressive. And then, yeah, the two missed tackles. I mean, one of them was like, I guess, a bad missed tackle. The other one was like, he's flying in pursuit and it was like an attempted ankle tackle. So yeah, I don't know. Not a concerning game at all for Sonny Styles.
What do you think about Kenyatta Jackson? Back to school, or do you think he's going to declare?
I think he's got to go back to school. I mean, if he declares, I do think he would go top 60 for sure because he's got the traits. He needs to find some way to win with speed that isn't like power to speed. I've talked about this before, but when I chart his moves, like, he leads this entire draft class in the percentage of his wins that come from power to speed. So it's like a bull rush goes nowhere, and then a couple seconds into the play, he's going to like swat down the outside arm, transition to speed, which is great, but he's not particularly powerful.
Not at all.
So that initial move doesn't really pack much heat. And there's very little on his tape of him getting a quick win along the outside track. So it's just, it's a, I think he's got to develop technically. I don't think that he's somebody that you draft early and he's going to immediately like be a high impact player as a pass rusher.
I struggle with pass rushers who the majority of their wins come inside. And he is one of the more slipperier pass rushers. Like I'll give him that. Like he is extremely hard to get hands on when he is crossing face and coming back inside. And I do like the lower half tools there, but yeah, like those hands are net negative. He lands a punch and it doesn't do anything. So we'll see what feedback he gets. Let's see what happens there. Anything else from Ohio State's defense you want to hit on before?
Has Jermaine Matthews Jr. announced that he's returning?
No, but he probably should.
Yeah. Last two games have been pretty rough from Jermaine Matthews, who I thought he had a really strong start to the season, and he kind of entered my radar, but yeah, firm back to school there.
Yeah. And then Cade McDonald had four stop tackles in this one. I think he's gone. I don't think he's coming back. So Miami defense, obviously the conversation starts with Bane and Mezidor. 14 total pressures and 3 PFF sacks in this game combined between the two. Bane was a menace, and then I saw a little bit more fluidity back in his ankles a little bit in this game too than I had seen in probably the last 4 or 5 weeks combined, with his ability to kind of contort the outside track a little bit in this one. Because again, I think that Philip Daniels is a good right tackle, and we'll talk about him quite a bit next year. Like, I just think we will. But he had Philip Daniels on a platter in this game.
Yeah, I said it, I think in our reaction video maybe, but his get off in this game was like, it looked like the Notre Dame tape, how explosive he was off the line of scrimmage. Go back and watch his pass rushing reps from the sideline angle and just see how much ground he's covering. And yeah, Daniels has no chance. I thought there were a couple of plays where he missed out on like a sack opportunity because he wasn't able to bend at the top, like especially later in the game. But yeah, Bane and Mezidor had two excellent performances. Mezidor's definitely risen for me. Mm-hmm. It's concerning how rarely he wins with power, especially like for a 25-year-old that of his size. I mean, yeah. He had the long arm against Trey Zune in the first round for the sack, which was awesome. But that was one of his first power wins of the year, and he tries it pretty consistently, and it gets stamped out.
Yeah. We've had the conversation about pass rushers needing to be able to convert speed to power and win with power. Like Kenyatta Jackson, it feels like every win that I see of Akeem Mezidor is crossing face, winning back inside.
Yeah.
So I really struggle with those kind of guys who do that a lot.
The reason that's not as translatable is number one, because you know, you're going up against tackles whose feet aren't like nailed to the ground. But if you're not the number one, if you're not the best edge rusher on your team in the NFL, you're not going to have a lot of freedom to choose your own rush lane. So like, you can't just counter inside based on the tackles set, because the quarterback's going to break the pocket, get a 20-yard scramble. It's like, I was watching a bunch of day three UDFA edge rushers, like Ndamaye Tucker out of Western Michigan, who got a Senior Bowl invite. There's a ton of MAC guys, and they all win with inside counters, like by far most often, because they're just clearly their team's best player. And it's like, yeah, just do whatever you can to get to the quarterback. The rest of the defense will be safe and try to clean up for you. Yeah. And, you know, no one's going to take Ndamaye Tucker in the seventh round and be like, all right, buddy, you're the central piece of our pass rush. We got Myles Garrett on contain. You're going to be, read the tackle. Right. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my biggest concern with Mezidor as well. Keontae Scott, really highly instinctual interception for return for a touchdown, game flipper in this one as well. Another older prospect for that Miami defense that they've kind of built around. But in terms of nickels, man, we're starting to get to the point where it's like, I don't think you can name three other nickels without naming Keontae Scott.
Well, I was watching Arizona defense today, and there's another older nickel.
Yes,
who is my nickel one, Traydon Stukes. Dude is a baller.
That's not who I was thinking you were talking about.
Okay, but Genesis Smith is a safety.
Well, no, I was talking about, I thought you were going to bring up Dalton Johnson again that we talked about yesterday.
Dalton Johnson is awesome too. I think Arizona's secondary is one of the most underrated units.
It's fun. Yeah.
Fun to watch for sure. But I will shout out Traydon Stukes in the nickel conversation. Keontae Scott, though, has absolutely a shot to be the first Nickel off the board, like you said, had the big pick six. He's just so physical in run support and rushing the passer, like a very talented blitzer.
Yeah, he is. He is indeed. Jacoby Thomas had a couple big hits in this game. He had one stop tackle. I think that's really all I've got. Anything else?
Amon Moten had some nice pass rush reps if he decides to declare. He's another guy that never wins with power, which is pretty concerning. But I think like he's getting a lot of top 60 buzz. And I mean, he is so explosive, crossing face and a very dynamic speed rusher.
Yeah, speaking of dynamic speed rushers and explosive, I think we should probably start the next game off by talking about Texas Tech's defense, because they've got two of the more explosive pass rushers in the nation, in the draft class, in David Bailey and Lee Hunter. Lee Hunter had seven stop tackles in this game and was unblockable by LaLulu. LaLulu made the great decision before even this game started to announce he's going back to school, because if he didn't announce it before, he was going to announce it after. Lee Hunter was unblockable in this game. And I'm starting to think that, like, Lee Hunter, I think, is 43 on my board. And going back and revisiting some of this tape, man, like, the more I watched Lee Hunter, it's like, should I have him over a guy like Caden McDonald, who is just like a run-stuffing nose? Because Lee Hunter can push pockets that Caden McDonald really can't. Like, so do we start having the conversation that, like, even at, where are we at 42, is that too low on Lee Hunter?
I think he's been top 40 since I watched him, basically. To add on this game, I went back and looked on True Media. This is a college football playoff record for six tackles made from a zero or one tech alignment. The previous high was five from Deron Payne in the national championship game against Georgia in 2018. But yeah, I think I tried to sneak him into the first round of our mock yesterday, but I couldn't find a spot. He doesn't get a lot of, you know, early pass rush opportunities like we've discussed with nose tackles, but he's very skilled, you know, defeating the edge of the block and finding his way into the pocket.
Yep. And then David Bailey, of course, had the big sack where he just blew right past Alex Harkey. Five stop tackles as well in this game, and four pressures for David Bailey.
I thought his sack was like the ninth most impressive play from his game, because to me that was on Alex Harkey really undersetting, and then Dante Moore was just backpedaling like out of his drop, so there was no angle that he had to turn. So I don't think that was like a super high quality rep, but man, it was the power that he was playing with. It's the two things that we wanted to see from David Bailey transferring from Stanford to Texas Tech is, can you play on early downs and can you win with power? I think he answered the second question pretty early into the season. The first question, as far as playing the run, like I went back and looked. I think when he played for Stanford, he was on the field on like 22% of their snaps against 12 personnel. And at Texas Tech, it was like 65%. So early in the year, he was at least on the field existing, but I didn't think he was, you know, very high impact in the run game. These last 2 weeks have been by far his two best games in run support. And the way that he was using his length to separate from blocks and some of the twitchy stack and shed that he was able to pull off. And like, he had a great rep against Harkey in the run game where he yanked him off to the side, a good rep against Pregnon. So I'm getting a lot more comfortable with Bailey top 10.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that as well, like having the conversation. And honestly, part of it goes back to as well, like at 6'3 in his length, he's got a good frame to continue to add on muscle too. So like that's a little terrifying to think through as well a little bit.
Yeah, he's going to have 34 plus inch arms probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unless they have, it'll be interesting to see if the combine measurements, if they correct from last year, you know, how they were, like everybody was a half inch short, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. I thought some of David Bailey's most impressive reps were two pass knockdowns to the line of scrimmage too. Like he had two of them where he leapt out of the stadium.
Yeah. That one in the end zone.
Yes. He got up to get to that one. This dude's going to, I think this guy's going to hit 40 on the vertical. Like if he tests, which some of these top guys just don't do anymore, but if he leaps, man, he's I think he's hitting 40. And if he runs the 40, I think we're talking like below 4.45.
You know what I think the real question with David Bailey, and like kind of the last thing that I've got in the back of my mind, what do you think his three cone would be?
He's tight.
Yeah.
He's tight. So it would, I don't think it would be great.
I don't think his three cone will be NA.
Yeah. He's not a fluid athlete. He gets awesome angles because he's consistently beating dudes on the snap. But yeah, he can't play outside of his frame too much.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move over to the Oregon defense then. What stood out to you most in this one? Again, for me, it was Jerry Mixon, but he's not even a draft eligible guy. Well, I guess he is, but I don't think he's going.
Is that 54?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was
all
over the place, man. He was all over the field. But I don't.
When I was watching the game, I think I checked. I was like, okay, is this dude draft eligible? Have I just somehow not noticed him all year? But yeah, he had an awesome game.
Yeah. Outside of that, I thought Dylan Thienemann was probably their best defensive player. I don't know what to make of his usage though, because at Purdue he was playing all single high. At Oregon he's stepping down almost every snap now. So like, I guess that shows he can do both. But he had 10 tackles. Or I'm sorry, that was he had 9 tackles and 5 stop tackles in this game, and he was hitting dude. Like it wasn't just like he's diving at ankles and wrapping up. Like he is
in form tackles.
Yes,
hard. Yeah.
Yes. So you mocked Dylan Thienemann in the first round of our mock draft yesterday. Does the lack of over-the-top reps concern you with Thienemann, I guess, is my bigger question. Or do you think
not at all?
Because you've seen him do it at Purdue, you think he's got the range to do it?
I think he's got the most proven versatility in this class because, like, he has 2 years of experience in one of the – I mean, Purdue led the league in cover three both years that he was there, and he's just playing single high every snap. And then now he's got experience basically like in the Caleb Downs role. Of kind of that middle field robber and like I'm fitting the run every play. So yeah, I think that just completes his resume to me.
Okay. Yeah, I think so too. I think he's going to end up safety 3 for me, man, because like the Genesis Smith tape, like I watched that dude when we watched him yesterday. And I was like, this guy's explosive. This guy's the only guy who's really playing real true single high in the class. And the dude is all like, he is rangy. So not a great tackler, but I think I'm okay with that in a single high.
That's what I was going to say. It comes down to the tackling.
But I think, again, I'm okay with that in a single high. Cause like you look at a guy like Kalen Bullock who plays for the Houston Texans out of USC, he had like a 25% missed tackle rate. But if he's like, you're the backstop for a reason. You're the third line of defense for a reason. So if it gets to you, then do what you can, but not a deal breaker for me. At that position.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Other
Oregon defense.
You know, Bryce Betcher had a good game. I don't think he's a outstanding prospect or anything. Mateo Uiagalelei had one of the best strip sacks of the year. Like the cross chop was just so perfect, so accurate on Alex Harkey's outside hand. Gets the strip sack. I think he did a great job setting the edge in the run game. So would shout out him as well. Amari Washington, I thought was pretty quiet.
I thought so too. Which was a little bit disappointing for me because I'm a huge Amari Washington fan. But all right, let's move over to the offenses here. Not a lot to talk about from either side offensively because it was a pretty poor offensive game, I think, from both of these teams. But the place that I'm going to start and maybe end the conversation here is with Jamari Johnson, man. Like, that's my guy. That is my guy through and through. Again, outproducing Kenyon Sadiq in the college football playoffs. Like, my hot
great
take.
Great take.
He's winning on benders over the middle. Mm-hmm. He's winning catching speed outs and chucking out some yak. Like, he's checking every box. I don't think he's an overly fluid athlete. Like, I think he's kind of like high hipped in his movements, but like, he can block, he plays in line, he catches everything thrown his way, and he wins at every level of the field. Like, he's another guy. I had him 38 on my big board when I dropped my top 50, and like, is 38 too low on Jamari Johnson?
Like, do you see any argument? Like, could you see yourself potentially having him tied in 1 over Sadiq?
So My big issue there is that, like, I think a lot, if you look at the tight ends at the NFL level, so much of what it takes to be a good tight end, or I guess a highly paid tight end at the NFL level, is your body of work after the catch. Like, you have to have yak ability. And I think that's Kenyon Sadiq does, and Jamari Johnson doesn't necessarily have that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So, like, but I think he's pretty clearly tight end too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think, like, I had Sadiq 16th on my big board, and I'm probably going to drop him down quite a bit from 16, but, like, he'll be above, but I think that gap is definitely closing.
You're dropping Sadiq down from 16.
Probably.
Wow. So I'm going in the opposite direction because, like, I had him maybe, I forget what, like 19 or something. And then as I'm finishing his evaluation, he's getting closer to the top 10 for me. Cause I think his tape has gotten so much better over the last few weeks. Like, there was a stretch down the middle of the year where he just wasn't making an impact. Like, he was noticeably getting, like, locked up catching.
Yeah.
So some concerning stuff middle of the season, but down the stretch, he's played excellent, I thought.
Interesting. We'll see how it ends up here, because they've got at least one more game left. So we'll see how that plays out. But what I do like from Sadiq now is, like, I don't have a concern with him playing in line. I think there are some people that have concerns with him playing true Y, and I don't. Like, I don't. He can throw it around in there. So I think maybe you want to get him flexed out, because that's where you can take advantage of the athleticism and the explosiveness and the dynasticism that he brings to the field. But I don't have concerns with him playing inside.
I feel like concerns with him blocking in line should be erased, like, once you press play. Like, when you see him that he's, like, short, it's like, okay, yeah, this is kind of more of a flex tight end. But then once you watch him block, it's pretty obvious that he can do it, I think.
Yeah, he's gotten massive quads, and he's got knee bend to win the battle. So, yeah, he's driving dudes out.
He's 6'3", but he's like a 6'5" guy that was just compressed.
Yes. So do you think that Pregnon is still your guard two in this class? Because my boy Besantis just declared today as well.
Oh, really? Yes, so Besantis, Besantis is going to be guard three for me. Okay. It would be between Pregnon and Vega, and I've got them like 21 and 22 on my board. And I have, I guess, similar concerns about Vega and Besantis. I just don't think that Pregnon has played that well to end the year, but I need to watch Vega's last three games to see how he played to finish the year.
Okay. And then we have to talk about Dante Moore, at least for a second here. It wasn't pretty when he was under pressure, when he sped up. Do we think that if he has another performance like this against Indiana, that we're back to talking about back to school? Or do you think that, like, the demand for a quarterback this year is too great and he's going to go top? I mean, I think he would go top five regardless, even if he craps the bed again this week. But what do you think we're looking at there?
So it's really tough to say, like, what a quarterback should do, because my answers would be different based on the context of the question. Like, what should he do best for his development is go back to school, because he clearly needs to speed up his response to pressure. But I think what should he do to maximize his career earnings? I would say declare, because we see consistently players, you know, follow that line of thinking and say, like, I'm going to, you know, go back for my senior year, build on a strong junior season, and then their play declines, their draft stock declines. He's pretty much a guarantee to get to be the second pick if he declares, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at next year's class, it's going to be steeper competition. Even if next year's class disappoints, I think it will be a stronger at the top of the first round.
Yeah, I agree. And again, like, there are some of the stuff, like, the bigger parts where he needs to develop, I think an NFL program can do that just as well as going back to Oregon as well. If that makes sense. Like, the body, like, the frame needs to bulk up a little bit. Like, the body needs to develop. I think an NFL strength and conditioning program would do that better than just as good or better than Oregon's. And then the response to pressure is something that, like, I think NFL coaches will have less patience for than a college coach. So maybe that's a little bit different, but interesting conversation. And that's going to take us to Indiana, Alabama. Let's start the conversation here with Indiana's offense. I don't think Fernando Mendoza's jersey got dirty in this game, like, at all.
after the first drive, especially, like,
yeah,
got sacked twice the first drive, and then it was pretty smooth sailing from there on.
Yeah. But that doesn't take away from the accuracy and the decision making in this game, because he was on time and he was on target to every level of the field. Some flag routes, corner routes, deep down the field, on the money to the boundary in this game, a couple of them. We're pretty close to solidifying him as the number one overall pick, I think.
Two incompletions, and I think one of them was his best throw of the game down the seam to Riley Nowakowski.
I was DMing Nate Tice about this, because Nate and I have been on the Fernando Mendoza train for a while, and he's even been on the podcast to talk about it over the summer. But like that ball to Nowakowski, ripping the seam, layering it over the second level defender. I told Nate, I was like, that might be his second best throw of the entire season, and it was an incomplete pass. Like,
are we saying first is the Iowa hole shot?
That's
number one for me.
Oh, easy. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, ripping a hole shot 30 yards down the field is something crazy. I was also thinking the Cooper top shelf game winner against Penn State.
Okay, yeah, that's, yeah.
But
that's almost more of like a Cooper play to me.
Yeah.
I feel like there were more impressive throws on that drive.
Yeah.
But I mean, that one was, yeah. I'm not trying to like downplay that throw, but yeah.
But that seam ball layered over top the second level, like as one of his only two incompletions of the game, is insane. That ball was insane.
Yeah, but, man, he was so sharp. I still have some concerns about, you know, under pressure, getting through his reads, hanging in the pocket. Like that's my biggest issue with Mendoza, but. I think with Moore's last performance against Texas Tech, and then pending how he plays in this game, I would probably guess that I'm going to end up with Mendoza as QB1.
Yeah.
It was a long road. I fought it.
You did. You did. So as consensus, people are still fighting it. I saw some fighting from some bigger name reporters out there as well. But
I think that there are flaws to Mendoza's game that it's important to discuss, and I think that his persona and like kind of his, the way that he's discussed in like national media, I think leads to people overrating his processing ability a little bit. Dante Moore is a better processor, throws with more anticipation, and is more comfortable working over the middle of the field than Mendoza is. But I do think that, and I also think that the what they're asking him to do, I think you do have to take that into account, is that, you know, he's in a very RPO heavy offense, so there are fewer high leverage decisions that he's being asked to make. But to me, I think Mendoza has a really hard time getting to his third read. He kind of does panic and bail the pocket a lot when his first read isn't open.
Okay. Okay. Outside of Mendoza chatter here, I just want to talk about Charlie Becker, and I can't talk about Charlie Becker yet. Omar Cooper had another strong game in this one as well. So did Surratt. Cooper and Surratt both had strong games in this one. I thought this was Carter Smith's best game of his career. I don't know if he's going to declare. I don't know if he's coming out, but like, I thought this was probably the best game of his career against Bama here. But again, like the offensive linemen for Indiana, if you're on schedule, like they're just jump setting you. Balls come out so fast. They're not kicking. So, what other Indiana offensive observations did you have here?
So a player that I hadn't really, like, he's been on my radar because I watch Indiana, but I hadn't really taken him too seriously as a draft prospect, but I thought this was by far his best game of the season. And that's running back Kalon Black. He had some great pass pro reps, but you know, his vision, I think, in the way that he sets up blocks, the patience, the ability to execute any kind of rushing concept, he does kind of fit the mold of like a plug and play starter in a rotation. Not going to be an early draft pick. He isn't a fantastic athlete or anything, but I think he can definitely be in a committee.
Mm-hmm. Him and Hemby are both like, Hemby is a heavy runner. His feet.
Yeah. Hemby's just like straight line speed, and I'm going to truck you and get 2 yards after contact. Kalen is more quick feet, you know, navigate through traffic.
Yep.
A lot more like nuance to his game.
I agree. And that takes us to the Alabama offense, where like I think Ty Simpson's got to find a home to play football at the college level next year, man. Like,
Tennessee, LSU. LSU get a quarterback commit? It's so hard to keep track
of. Not yet, but they have one that I'm not going to say on the podcast.
Okay.
They have one. But Tennessee makes sense. His dad's the head coach at UT Martin. So, like, his dad's the head, like, an employee of a branch school of UT. So there's some connections there. He's from Tennessee. They haven't landed a quarterback yet. I just think that Alabama's going to want to put out Keelan Russell next year. Like, I don't think they're going to want to run it back with Ty Simpson another year. So we'll see. There was that reporter who said he's weighing his options. If he gets first round feedback, he's going. If not, he's coming back. But like, I don't think he's had first round tape since week 7.
No. Yeah. He's, I think my advice would definitely be go back for Ty Simpson. My biggest takeaway was, I don't think that you can justify drafting Caden Proctor if you run outside zone at like an above average rate. You know, it's just, he physically can't get some of these backside cutoffs, and they can't run stretch because Caden Proctor's not going to reach his landmark.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I was told this week that he's getting 50-50 feedback between guard tackle from the NFL. And I asked, like, well, what's the range? And I was told still top 50, which is a pretty disappointing outcome for a player like Proctor, given the hype he had coming into the season, for that feedback for the person that I asked to answer still top 50. But that's as high as he felt comfortable, like, saying for Proctor in this class. I'm on board that I think he needs to be a guard. He's getting beat by wide alignment at ease, and it's frequent. He's getting beat back across his face because he's stiff and he can't redirect. And it's causing him to strain to kick wide and kick vertical to the point where he's giving up oversets then, to try to compensate. And it's getting scary season again. The R. Mason Thomas 1-on-1 is a bloodbath from a 232-pound edge rusher with 31-inch arms. So there are guys at the NFL level who are 6'4", 275, who can move like that with 35-inch arms. So I struggle with Proctor at tackle.
Yeah, we talked about it in the mock draft, but like, he lost on that inside move to Mikhail Kamara, who's just, I mean, he's a UDFA. And there's just every edge rusher that you go up against in the NFL is going to be quicker than that. Mm-hmm. So,
did you see that Parker Burlesford declared?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked him a little bit earlier in the year, but he's too small to work.
So small. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets overwhelmed in both phases, cannot get any movement whatsoever. And like he has really good, you know, technique, pad level. If he was just in a bigger body, that's an NFL center, I think. But you watch him, like, you'll watch him anchor, and it's perfect technique. He's got, you know, a wide base. He's hop stepping. He's punching up. He's got his hands inside, and then he just gets overwhelmed.
Yep. And then one last thing from Alabama's offense here before we go to defense is that your guy Jaden Roberts played another whole 14 snaps in this game as well. So
yeah, he's just
every week. Yeah. All right. Defensively for Alabama, I don't have a big overarching takeaway from this unit. The linebackers have been awful the past couple weeks for Bama, between Jefferson and Lawson.
Jefferson was really good against Oklahoma.
Yeah. I think they're both day three players. LT Overton, again, I think is a day three player. Again, my favorite
Jefferson player can go back to school, I think.
Yeah.
He's got eligibility. Yeah. LT Overton, we need to hit on LT Overton. He looks like a shell of what he looked like last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's an injury or if, like, maybe he added weight or something, but it's pretty concerning, LT Overton's tape.
I think he needs to kick inside, because again, his arms aren't as long as people thought they were. like when we got the verifieds of the summer, and then he's not as tall as he's listed at. He's like 6'2", like 6'1".
What's the verified?
He's listed at 6'5". Let me pull it up real fast.
He's got
He is 6'2", 274 with 33.5 inch arms. So I guess the arms aren't terribly bad, but sub 34 arms at 6'2", despite being listed at 6'5" on, or 6'4", 6'5" on Bama's website. Yeah, man. Again, my favorite player on this Bama defense is Yanze Pierre, and he's not going to come out. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't think he's going to come out. So I don't have much to talk about with this Bama defense.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Keenan has incredibly heavy hands, like the club. Have you noticed that? Like when he's, you know, shaded into one gap and then he can just club and shed into the opposite gap. I think he had some nice reps, but yeah, it was
29 inches in his arms and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some guys that are not draft eligible that I won't mention just had brutal performances for Alabama.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Indiana defense, Devin Boykin just continues to play really well down the stretch for them. He's an older guy, but he's going to get drafted, man. He's going to get drafted.
I have like the almost exact same thought process with, I feel like, 90% of Indiana prospects.
Uh-huh.
It's like the scouting report reads almost the exact same, regardless of position. It's like technically sound, smart, doesn't bust coverages, miss assignments, whatever. Fluid athlete, like they do a really good job of scouting change of direction, I think. And then short arms, maybe doesn't have straight line speed. Like those are kind of, it's a lot of, you know, measurable or physical limitations, but then great technically. That's sort of how I feel about Devin Boykin, Lewis Moore, the safety, D'Angelo Pons, the corner, Carter Smith, Aiden Fisher. I mean, next year we'll be talking about Isaiah Jones and Relijah Hardy. Those got two both fall into that. Tyreek Tucker, Mikhail Kamara, who I don't even really think is that great of a player.
Six rushes in this game still.
Yeah, but they were like stunts. I mean, he's a good college player. I just don't really see any NFL upside. But that is when you have to recruit G5 guys, the one thing that doesn't slip through the cracks normally is going to be measurables, because you don't really have to be a good scout to see that a guy's tall and big. But I do really like Devin Boykin. He is, I don't think he was even on NFL radars, but has a good shot to go on day three probably after the season.
I agree. Let me see if they have him graded on the summer grades that I've got. They do not. All right. My other takeaway here is that I think D'Angelo Pons is going to punch in the nickel for 7-8 years, man. Just like, that dude is such a good tackler at his size. Mm-hmm. And again, he's fluid, so he can change directions in either direction. So he's the perfect ideal nickel to be able to anticipate in routes, out routes, flip his hips, speed turn, be able to cover a lot of ground. And then he fits, man. Like he will fit. He'll fit a run and punch. So I love D'Angelo Pons.
Would you take Pons or Keyonte Scott probably to play nickel? Pons.
I'll take the upside shot on the age on that one. And I think Pons is probably more explosive.
I would take Keyonte Scott in a zone scheme. I would take Pons in a man scheme.
Yeah, I could see that. I could get on board with that. Anything else from this defense you want to throw out here before we move on to the last game?
No, that's all I had from the defense. It was I think Lewis Moore had a nice rep. He's another guy that's worth mentioning. He's had a lot of production. Transfer from Indiana to Ole Miss, back to Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll be another day three pick, probably.
Yep, I agree. All right, that takes us to Georgia, Ole Miss. And this one will probably be quick because there's not a lot of prospects to talk about in these games between both sides. Trinidad Chambliss going back to school, he's announced. The process is still working out with the waiver, but he has re-signed a new deal where they sound pretty optimistic he's going to get his sixth season. So if we wanted to talk about Chambliss, I could rave about this performance because I thought he played really freaking well. And has so much arrogance in that little arm of his. I shouldn't even say little arm. I guess size-wise it's little, but like he can drive windows, man. He can drive some freaking windows. I just got distracted because Damond Williams just entered the transfer portal, Washington quarterback. Trinidad Chambliss going to go back, so we shouldn't spend much time here, I guess. Ole Miss offense-wise, like, I just want to talk about Deshaun Stribling again, man. I just want to talk about Deshaun Stribling. He's going to be at Shrine, so I hope Senior Bowl doesn't poach him, and I hope that we get a chance to talk to him, because to me, I said it, Sam Teets was on the podcast when you were out sick last week, and we did a draft or draft about which day three wide receiver would be the most productive as a rookie.
I listened to that.
And it was, I chose Stribling, and he does, and I'm never going to comp anybody to Puka, because Puka is the 99th percentile outcome for a day three wide receiver to have that kind of impact in that kind of career. But like, same body type, same kind of like versatility to align him anywhere. He can play. He can even, he's even kind of like in 12 personnel as that second wide receiver. You can kind of treat him as a third tight end almost as well. Like, it's pseudo 13. So you're getting mismatch opportunities. He can run slide flats and chunk out yards. RPO sticks, he's chunking out yards. He can stretch you vertically. Like, this is a guy that I really like. I might have a day two grade on him by the time it's all said and done. And I think he's going to go day three, but I like Deshaun Stribling quite a bit.
Yeah, I finished with a late third on Stribling. Echo all the thoughts that you said. I think to me, the most impressive part about his game is the run blocking and just how consistent it is. Like, there might be other receivers that have more dominant finishes, I guess, but somebody that is just consistently sustaining blocks through the whistle, like, he'll be driving a guy to the sideline, and like Harrison Wallace has already disengaged and he's just like watching Stribling. It's pretty funny. And like, Wallace isn't a terrible run blocker, in his own right. But yeah, like I said, I went back and caught up on all of Ole Miss offense, this past weekend after watching the Georgia game. And I think Harrison Wallace is probably the best decelerator in this class. And and he's a guy that runs like a 4.38, which is the ideal combination. He really struggles to play through contact down the stem. And so he is rarely getting up to 4.38 speed unless he has free access. But I like him early day three and coming off of the best game of his season for sure.
Yeah, agreed. And then the last thing on Ole Miss's offense I want to hit on here is I continue to think that Diego Pound is the developmental tackle that I would draft in this class, that day three developmental tackle that I would draft in this class. Didn't give up pressure in this game. I think he's given up one pressure in the two games combined. Again, he looks the part body type wise, and he's got the feet for it. The rest is still pretty rough. But he's the developmental guy that I would take in this class.
I like him on day three. The tape is just not good enough to justify earlier than that, but I like the developmental traits. And then my two lowest graded players on the offense, I still have draftable grades on Jaden Williams, the right tackle, who's probably a guard, and then Daquan Wright, the tight end. I had liked Daquan Wright more earlier in the season. I was shocked at how tentative and hesitant he is into block fits. Like, he cannot connect to blocks at the second level. He gets shed so easily, and so I really see like no blocking upside for him, and then he's a clunky athlete. So yeah, I have a seventh on him.
I agree with the clunky athlete part of that for sure. He's got really awesome hands and he's got a massive frame, which is like good for him. But he needs to be able to block at that size as well, if he's not as fluid or smooth of an athlete as he needs to be. And he's not. Georgia offense. Two names I just really want to hit on here. Monroe Friedling is going to go in the first round. Like, his pass blocking has gotten much better over the back five. And, we probably started talking about him, what, 5-6 weeks ago? Since then, like, because then I caught up on his tape and was like, yeah, I mean, I see it. He's still really raw. The pass blocking stuff is really good. It's really good. He's a really smooth athlete. The hands are cleaning up a little bit, and he's got long levers. He's going to go first round if he declares.
I agree with that. Yeah, he one of his better games of the season. I think that... Would you take Freeling or Blake Miller? Because that's really the debate for me. I'm leaning more towards Freeling based on how the season's played out recently.
I think I would too.
Yeah.
I think I would too.
Can I guess the second guy that you want to mention?
Is it Zachariah
Branch? Is it Zachariah Branch, quote-unquote, yeah. First-round pick?
Dude, he's declared. I did an Inside the Film Room on him today because of the declaration. Dude, 51 of his 93 targets have come behind the line of scrimmage this season. And 71 of 93 within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And then I had people in my mentions being like, yeah, but he actually can run routes. I watched three games, man, and it was some of the ugliest routes I've ever seen in my life. No, he can't. Not right now. There's no salesmanship. Everything's rounded. I even think he's a little tight in the ankles for how slippery he is in the open field. Like, his decel is not great, and getting out of breaks is not overly fluid.
I totally agree. And I mean, you talk about the A dot, he's got the lowest, yeah, the lowest percentage of his receiving snaps or routes this year against press coverage, 7.7%, lowest in this entire class and one of the lowest in college football. And the historical, I would be more open-minded if the historical success rate of these types of players was anything like greater than zero, you know, but there's just, I mean, there's no proof of concept that you can point to of Zachariah Branch working. And so that's just the kind of player that I'm going to be lower on. And if I miss it, thinking of it is like, if I'm a GM, I'm fine to miss on a player if it's going to be like a historical outlier, because at least the process is good. Now, if the Zachariah Branch types start taking over the NFL, then you've got to adjust your process. Right. But I don't think there's any evidence that this works as anything more than like a probably fourth option, like in your offense in total, you know, third option in the passing game.
Yep. Not a guy you draft early to build a room around is definitely my conclusion as well. People want to bring up, well, what about Debo Smith? Debo Smith is 200, or Debo Samuel. Debo Samuel is 215 pounds. Zachariah Branch is listed at 180, which means he's probably smaller than that. So, yeah, I can't buy in. I can't buy in with anything more than like a mid-day three pick.
It's one of the reasons, it's something kind of valuable that I get from doing comps is like sometimes when I'm filling out NFL comparisons, like if I can't think of an actual comparison, sometimes it might just be that this player is so unique that there really is no describing him, but sometimes it does kind of tell the story of like, yeah, there are no real, you know, examples of this playing out in the NFL.
Yep, I agree. And then obviously, like, let's just touch on defense here real fast too. Again, really the only defensive player from either team, honestly, that stands out in this class. I mean, CJ Allen was really bad. I thought this was CJ Allen's worst game of the season.
It was bad.
It's Christian Miller was the name I was going to say. Mm-hmm. And Christian Miller doesn't have any pass rush upside, but I continue to think that he's one of the more explosive and one of the more stout defensive tackles in the class. His hands are heavy.
Did you see that tackle he made with his helmet ripped off?
Yes.
Yeah, that was awesome. I feel like he does have some pass rush upside if he was in a more friendly scheme. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. He's got a two-gap everything right now. That's a good point. And then Ole Miss defense, I don't have a name to throw out to you there.
And to be clear, the reason I say that with Christian Miller is not just like, he wasn't asked to rush the passer, so I'm just going to like guess that he can. It's like on the reps where he's getting into a pass rush late, you actually see like some good hand technique, some lateral quickness to cross face. I don't think he's going to be a high volume pass rusher or anything, but could be some untapped potential there in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that just because, again, if you're explosive, you can win through the chest. And if you add a counter to that, game over. Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else you want to add here?
I will shout out Wydette Williams for Ole Miss defensively, the safety. He had a really nice performance. And then also my biggest takeaway outside of Christian Miller from Georgia's defense is that as much as we've talked down on like their NFL draft talent for this year, they've got some dudes coming up. The defensive tackle, Elijah Griffin, was a really highly recruited player. He was probably their Georgia defense's best player besides Christian Miller.
Yep. All right. So we were going to break down the next matchup game, but we're already at an hour here. So let's just talk about, let's go through predictions.
You want to shelve it for tomorrow?
Yeah. Let's just hit predictions real fast and just go, and then we'll break it down tomorrow. So James, throw out a prediction here, by FanDuel, Miami 3.5 point favorites and Indiana 3.5 point favorites over Oregon, Miami versus Ole Miss. What do you got?
I'm going to go, man, this is tough because I'm not sure how much Miami can score.
I love Miami's defense vibe to them, man.
So I love Miami's defense and Ole Miss's offense. I think that Ole Miss might have the defensive advantage over Miami's offense, but I'm going to go 24-16 Miami.
Okay. I don't think they, like, if Ohio State couldn't block Bane and Mesidor, I don't think Diego Pound and the other dude on the right side are going to be able to either.
Jaden Williams, no.
Yeah, Jaden Williams. That's what's really throwing me off here. I don't think Miami can score as much as they Ole Miss can. It's going to be tight. I will say Ole Miss just has a Team of Destiny vibe to them. So I'm going to go Ole Miss, but it's going to be tight, like 21-24. And then I'll go Indiana over Oregon in the rematch here, too. I'm going to say 20-30, just like it was the first time around, too.
So I don't want to jinx Indiana, but I do think that they're going to win. So I'll pick them. And I'm going to say, because I kind of think it's going to be 30-20 also, but I don't want to take yours. So I'll go. I think it might be lower scoring. I'll go 28-17.
Okay. There we go. Well, we'll come back. We'll talk about these games in more depth, matchups, stuff like that to talk about tomorrow. But until next time, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.